Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wow, another week, another podcast. Welcome to Moments That Rock with me, Tony Michaeli. This Moments That Rock is a cornucopia of all things music, where we delve deep into some back catalogue. The back catalogue being industry insiders, music industry insiders, of course, and artists, and we ask them to share moments that rocked their world. Today's guest is pretty special, from 40 years ago when I worked with this band, Frankie Goes to Hollywood. His name is Nasher, he's the guitar player, but we'll leave the rest to him.
All right, my name's Nash, and I'm a Red Muso. And a long time ago, when all this was a swamp, I was a pop star in Frankie Goes to Hollywood. These days, I've returned from 34 years in London to return to Liverpool, now living by the Merseyssippi and conducting business as a funeral celebrant, which is why I'm wearing this suit. And no, I'm not in court. Before we get any bad Scouser jokes.
Very good, sir. So listen, obviously we go back a long time. I mean, just the mere mention of your name makes me smile and think of those times. I mean, it was quite a ride, to put it mildly, wasn't it? Tell us briefly how it all came about and how you got in. Because I know Frankie came back in different formats, but Frankie Goes to Hollywood for me was 1984 to kind of 86, I think, when you kind of Holly left and things. But I'll leave it to you because you were more there than me.
Well, yeah, we all used to rehearse in a place called the Bridewell, loads of different bands. The Bridewell is now currently a fantastic pub, just being voted best pub in Liverpool. It's my local, so I always get looked after there, and it's quite weird to think that, you know, almost 40 years later from when the band were formed, in fact, over 40 years, the band were formed in 1982 there. We got signed to a record deal to ZTT. Not the worst record deal in the world, but close. Still arguing about that. And I always describe my time in Frankie as going to a party in 1984 and coming home about 3 years later, which is how it was. There were some lean times after that, but the old adage, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, is definitely... definitely has some meaning for me. And we're all still here, and it's all boss. We reunited just over a year ago. Just coming up for a year ago to do something for Eurovision, which was basically something I wasn't really interested in doing. But when my two partners in crime, Mr. Gill and Mr. O'Toole, said they were keen, I kind of looked on it as an opportunity that somebody was going to pay to bring all of my friends to my doorstep. So that was quite a good thing, but not something I'd really want to go forward on a permanent basis, let's say that.
There was a lot of kind of friction in there, as we know, and stuff and things. But I mean, there was nothing quite like it for decades, really. I mean, talk about a phenomenon. You just kind of exploded, didn't you? And kind of the success and stuff was just phenomenal. Were you okay dealing with it? Or were there times when you thought, you know, I thought we'd do okay, but I didn't know we'd do quite this okay?
I was talking to someone on the radio here the other week, because we just had the anniversary of Relax getting in the charts. And like, when Relax got to about 50 and then went down, it went to about 54, I think, and then went down to 55. And I thought, well, that's a mark. We've made our mark. We exist in the records of, you know, of the Guinness Book of It records. And that was kind of like, would have been all right. But we never expected what was going to come after that. But I think we always had faith in the record. and knew that if we could get this record on the radio and people could hear it, that it would have been a hit. It sounded like a hit, you know, Relax sounded like a hit record. But yeah, it was a great ride, and I got to go and do and see things that I never thought I'd see. I got to appear on the last radio show for a start. And I think another memorable time in Manchester Piccadilly, Timmy Mallett played the Frankie T-shirt because he was sick of playing the records. He brought the Frankie Say T-shirt is going in and actually put the stylus on the turntable up on top of the T-shirt. Fantastic. Do we have an appreciation for what happens in your own life? I don't think anybody does. I think the enormity of it is usually seen within the eyes of other people rather than you, because it just happened to you. You know, it was like being in the eye of a hurricane and you don't really have time to think. But it was a ride and a fantastic experience. And of course, there were negatives to it, but the positives far outweigh the negatives. You know, there was it was a blast, and I've continued to have a blast. I've been feel very fortunate to have had the life that I've had.
What I tend to say is, I don't think until the roller coaster stops that you really start to appreciate it and realize that, you know, I mean, I don't want to kind of put a downer on things, but I mean, things have changed in the music industry. I mean, Frankie Goes to Hollywood would not be Frankie Goes to Hollywood if they started today, unless you had like a million followers on Instagram or something. And I love the fact that, you know, I mean, obviously the BBC played a part by banning you and stuff, but did you tour the world with Frankie Goes to Hollywood?
We didn't go to South America. I still haven't been to South America. I'm hoping to go later this year because I haven't been. I've got a few projects that I want to be involved in, which are too voluminous to go into here, really. But no, never went to Australia. Really got no desire to go there either. It's too far. But I think looking back on when we talk about, like, reflecting on what happened at the time, when you're young, 21, 22, as we were when it was happening, you don't really have time to reflect on it because everything is moving so fast. And I found that when I turned 50 was a big, not like massive thing in my life, but when you turn 50, there's no denying that you're closer to the front of the queue than you are at the back. And that is kind of amplified a little bit more by the time you get to 60, and you start to evaluate the time that you've got left. So when I think, you know, people, when we did the Eurovision thing and people going, oh, why don't you get back together and do this and do that? And it's like, I'm in the queue and I don't want to spend my time in the queue doing something that I did 40 years ago. And also, in terms of being a musician, I've never stopped being a musician. I've continued to write and continue to perform. Okay, not to the same extent as Frankie Goes to Hollywood, nor would I want to. I just do it because I do it. And, you know, people listen to this, if they want to go out, they can find my stuff. I'm out there on Spotted Theft, along with all the other scrabbling, starving musicians, and on YouTube. So you can hear what I do. And it's like, my life as a musician is more than just being a member of Frankie Goes to Hollywood for 4 years, 40 years ago, you know. So I think reflecting on it, fantastic. But it's a piece of luggage that I will forever carry with me. You're having this conversation with me today because we're talking about the luggage, or that is how we know each other. But I'm not that guy anymore. Whilst I accept that people are interested in it, and I accept that this is the 40th anniversary of all of that madness happening, and it's a good thing to talk about it, and I can talk about it, and I talk about it well, and I've got no qualms about, you know, saying what I think about it. And, you know, whilst I've got breath in my body, people are going to ask me about it, so I can't really be getting ideas above my station about, like, oh yeah, I don't really, you know, that was all in the past, or I don't want to talk about it. It is in the past, but it's part of who I am, and it's been part of who I am until someone sends me through the curtains.
I think that's great because, I mean, it's a good line for you for future interviews. Just said, I lived in my pleasure dome. Now I'm in the life of pleasure. I'm moving forward in my own. What I do admire about you, Nash, is the fact that, you know, I mean, I love Led Zeppelin for the fact that when John Bonham died, there was no Led Zeppelin. So the reincarnation, for want of a better word, of Frankie without the original lineup is not Frankie Goes to Hollywood, but, you know, they're kind of almost like a tribute band to Frankie Goes to Hollywood. It's either the real thing or nothing, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't even want the real thing. I mean, I remember going to see Holly play, sneaked in, about, I don't know, must have been 10 years ago, actually. And there's people there who were in that audience. And, you know, no disrespect to them. I'm sure there are some very nice people in that audience. But the people who are on this wagon now, because they went to Rewind and saw Holly doing this thing. And, you know, when they were going to school, their mum used to play Pleasure Dome in the car. And it's full of people like, you know, Tabitha and Henry from HR. And I don't want to play to those people. I don't want to be playing to a load of old pensioners, you know what I mean? Because it's not the same thing, and we're not the same people. And the only reason to do it would be to do it for the money. And I'm not interested in the money. There isn't enough money in the world to make me want to go and do that. And, you know, ever since we did the Eurovision thing, there has been offers of money. And it's like, I don't care. I'm all right. You know what I mean? How much money do I want? I'm not starving. I can afford me eating, despite the fact that it's an arm and a leg. But I'm okay. I've got and the job I'm doing now, I absolutely love. The people who I work with are fantastic. And it's something that's really worthwhile. And it's not traipsing around the world doing something just for a paycheck. With people who as much as I love Mark and Pat, I ain't seen Paul in 40 odd, you know, I can't remember the last time, probably at that band's reunited. With regards to Holly, he ain't me mate, you know. Why would I want to go traipsing around the world with him? We've got nothing in common. And the lust for a payday is not enough reason for me to want to do that. I'd rather be busking on Church Street in the centre of Liverpool than be going out, you know, counting the coin.
Love it. No, it's great. It's true to, you know, it's true to yourself. And you know,
look at that. Look who's ringing me.
Excellent. Look
at that. Can you believe that? Hang on.
He can wait. We won't be long.
I'll have to call you back. He must have heard me talking about him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not forcing you into it, but can you share some special moments from your, you know, halcyon days in the pop music industry? You know, things that you really...
Oh, God, there's too many. I mean, it's when, you know, you think about... I would say coming back to Liverpool after doing an American tour and playing three nights in Liverpool was amazing. Playing six nights at Hammersmith Odeon. Playing stuff like Red Rocks. It's all of my great memories are kind of around the concerts, you know, rather than anything else. And the times and the laughs and you know, I've gone through this. I wrote an autobiography and it came out to the worst publisher in the world who didn't do a carrot. Again, another lesson learned, and I recorded an audio book, and I kind of like leave all of that back there. But it was great, you know. You couldn't really pin it down to one thing, you know. It'd be, you know, I've been married for the best part of 40 years now, and it'd be saying like, well, what's the best time you've ever had with your missus? You know, it's you can't pin it down to that. It's an accumulation of really great experiences. It's interesting when you share these things with people and you tell them about it, and you know, all they seem to know about now is kind of like the records and what happened then, and they don't really know about the aftermath of that, and you know how this thing comes crashing down, and you know people think you're millionaires, and we didn't make any money from record sales until 1992, so like we didn't recoup our ridiculously huge recording costs until the Frankie Greatest Hits came out in 1992, and you know when that happened, I was on the dole, you know, and it living in a rented house. I'd lost. We'd managed to sell the house that we'd bought, 2 weeks before it was due to be repossessed. I had two kids, you know, signing on at all, getting hours and benefit. I look back on it now and go, wow, that was pretty heavy. And but again, like being in the band, you're in the middle of this situation and you've just got to get on with it and do, you just got to get through the other side of it. And you look back on it now and go, wow, that was pretty heavy. And that was a bit tough. And I was talking to my daughter about it recently. She said, I've only got great memories of that time. You know, you being at home and, you know, going down the shop with your ear, putting 20 pence in the flying elephants outside the shop. We are an accumulation of our experiences. And I say, being 60 years old, I was 21 when Frankie started, and it was only 3 years of my life. And since then, you know, the music I've made and the time I spent in studio and the musicians I've played with kind of really trumps a lot of what I did in Frankie, because it's a different thing. Being a musician is not always about being a pop star, and being in Frankie Goes to Hollywood was about being a pop star.
Excellent. You're listening to Frankie Goes to Hollywood Man, Mr. Graham Nash. Graham Nash, no, Mr. Brian Nash. Nasher. Excellent. He's reflecting on his time spent with Frankie Goes to Hollywood and talking about being a pop star for a few years and what he's up to now. We'll have more of Graham. No, more of Brian Nash coming.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment of Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Back in a moment.
In terms of going back as well, I mean, everybody goes back. And everybody goes back and has another go. And it's like, it's never the same. It's never the same. And, you know, I've been guilty of going to see these bands. And like people like Magazine, they're the only ones who are exempt. And Magazine were brilliant. But, you know, going to watch all these other bands who are still out there doing it, I'd rather sit at home planting snot than be going to one of these Rewind festivals and watching a load of 80s bands doing their hits.
Promoters like lure you in, throwing a bit of money at you, because basically if they throw a bit of money at you, they'll make a lot of money. to deliver anything, because like I say, it's like you get the odd boy band that reforms. Well, there's no such thing as a man band, is there? The boy band isn't a boy band when they're like 45, 50. I mean, obviously I've worked with a lot of bands over the years and I've seen them grow and I've seen them fail and things. But, you know, as a kid growing up, maybe watching Top of the Pops, and then was that moment when you were on Top of the Pops thinking, wow, how did that happen?
I was amazed. You look at the highlights when you're asking about highlights. But the first time being on Top of the Pops, because this was, you know, people don't really understand. You couldn't explain to youngsters what Top of the Pops was. It was our church, and it's where we saw all of our gods. You know, it's where we saw Bowie. It's where we saw Roxy Music. And for me, you know, the massive influence for me growing up was Slade. And you know, when Mark O'Toole and his brothers all used to do, you know, gigs in social clubs, they'd be playing Slade songs, you know, stuff from Slade's Alive, Hear Me Calling, Know Who You Are, Born to Be Wild. And I think Mark O'Toole was playing all his Jimmy Lee bass lines when he was about 13 years old, playing in social clubs that he wasn't even supposed to be in. And so me and Mark were both massive Slade fans. And when we come to do Top of the Pops, Slade had a bit of a resurgence because they'd stood in for Ozzy Osbourne at Reading in must have been 1983, and they brought out a record. I think it might have been Wall of Sound, Radio Wall of Sound or something. And me and Mark are in the green room at the bar, and we're standing there talking to John Powell and Jimmy Lee. And, you know, you think like 10 years ago, prior to that, Mark O'Toole had been standing outside Liverpool Empire waiting to get Jimmy Lee's plectrum, you know, with his brother Jed. And the maddest thing about it is we're just another band to them. We're not just these like scruffy kids from Liverpool. They were talking to us like we were musicians, you know, like we were on the show as well. And I still love Slade now. I still listen to Slade's records now. That was a big moment in terms of that. But Top of the Pops, you know, this talk about trying to bring it back, but it'll never be the same. It kind of lost its way with on the back of the X Factor and all of those other things where music, instead of being a passion and a feeling or a movement, it just became a number on a balance sheet, which is what it is now. You know, it's just, I don't know what I want to sound like me. It all just sounds the same to me. It all sounds like it's being made by AI. You know, when was the last time you heard a record that had an interesting bridge? You're just thrown to it. They're all the same four chords. The chord changes every bar or every two bars. You don't hear, or it seems to be a lot of creativity has gone out of it. And I don't know whether that's because, you know, there's probably about half a dozen people writing all the music for most of the recording artists in the world.
To think like how influential Slade were. And it was a real pleasure to meet Noddy Holder. He was at Piccadilly in my days, you know, and Noddy was such a top guy. And even if you think Oasis doing Come On, Feel the Noise and something, maybe when you picked up a guitar, maybe that was in the back of your head thinking, wow, I wonder if I could, you know, be like Slade and things. But over those years, Nash, you must have met a lot of people. Did you meet the Bowies of the world and stuff?
No, never met David Bowie, never saw him play live. And he was an absolute game changer for me, seeing the Life on Mars video as a kid. Blew my mind. I never got to meet him, but yeah, met a load of people, you know, who were just so many. You know, when you're playing that game, who's the most famous person you've ever met? Well, like, who'd you throw in first? Do you throw in Robin Williams, or do you throw in Quincy Jones, or do you throw in Gene Kelly? I always throw in Gene Kelly because, like, Gene Kelly kind of transcends pop culture. You know, Gene Kelly's on his own planet, isn't he? It's quite interesting. Recently, I was in my local pub, and there was loads of Everton players in there who were from that fantastic 80s Everton team. And I was standing there having a conversation with Trevor Stephen, and I must be the first person in Trevor Stephen's life who's had a conversation with him for 20 minutes and never mentioned football. And we never really mentioned music either. And it's like, because I'm just not asked, you know, I'm not impressed and about by like meeting famous people, and I don't get overawed by it. You just, you know, you put your kecks on one leg at a time, just like everybody else, you know. And after having that conversation with him, he was going like, "Wow, you're something different, you." And I went, I'm not. I'm just the same as you. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to sit here asking you about that goal you scored in 1987. What was it like to lose two cup finals to Liverpool?
It was a cultural thing then. And so were Frankie in their own way, you know. I mean, people buy into, I mean, for fear of repeating myself, I mean, even go back to the 60s. I mean, Bob Dylan didn't, you know, stop the Vietnam War, but he made kids aware. And I think that's the power of music and artists. They have their platform.
The power of music and about people trying to get behind that. I think we had a case from kind of the 80s on where the music would eventually become driven by the hardware and what we can, the hardware we can sell to play the music. And it kind of began with CDs. And we've got this ridiculous thing now where people are playing vinyl and they're going, "Vinyl sounds great." And they're going, "No, it doesn't. It sounds rubbish compared to CDs. It sounds rubbish. It sounds better than your crappy MP3s. And, you know, I'm all with you with that. That's, yeah, it, but don't start telling me the vinyl sounds great. And, you know, you're going like, "Oh, I've just got, you know, Rumours by Fleetwood Mac." What you're listening to is a bastardized version of a digital file that's been cut onto plastic from a digital file. It's not even analog. It's not even the same thing. And the vinyl heads. Oh, the vinyl heads. Come the day of the revolution, they can all hold the vinyl up on above their heads while I shoot them one by one. Except the ones who got Ziggy Stardust. You hold up your favourite piece of vinyl. Anyone who's holding up Ziggy or Slade Alive gets a pass. Someone asked me from up at BBC Scotland to do a little 2 or 3 minutes about one of my favourite albums. I had a choice of two. I said, "You tell me which one, Bridge Over Troubled Waters or Ziggy Stardust." And he said, "Someone's done Bridge Over Troubled Waters." I went, "Okay, Ziggy Stardust." And I put it on the car and I'm listening to it. And it's, you know, I can't listen to Ziggy Stardust as it was when it came out, because some deaf balloon has remastered it. And it's like the 2012 remaster of Ziggy Stardust. And I'm listening to Soul Love in the car. And the finger click, it's all been maximized to within an inch of its life. And the finger clicks just sound horrible. It just sounded absolutely horrible. There's no warmth to it at all. And I'm two tracks in and I turned it off. I'm not listening to that. That's not the Ziggy Stardust I remember. That's just an audio sausage now. It's great. You can really hear the finger clicks. I don't want to hear the finger clicks that bleeding loud over everything else. It was just horrible. But, you know, I don't listen to a lot of music anymore. I hear the music in the supermarket. That's why I'm a Swiftie. You know, I heard Anti-Hero in the supermarket over the road from me the other day, and I thought, what a tune. You know, the little bit of quality there. And, you know, it's not just a drum machine. It's not life on Mars, is it, Tony? The worst thing about being a musician and trying to perfect and be the best you can at your craft is that every single piece of music you hear is a critique, and you don't hear music like punters hear music. And there are probably about 3 or 4 bands in the world that make me feel like a punter. The real people from Liverpool, I'll go and see them play live. I've seen them play 20 odd times, maybe more. I'll sing every word. Low from Duluth, Minnesota. Fantastic. Loved them, seen them loads of times. The Posies, another American band. People like Ricky Lee Jones. And outside of the patron saints, you know, people like Ricky Lee Jones, Neil Young, all of those, you know, heritage artists. That's the word, isn't it? The heritage. Yeah. I'm not interested in seeing any of them. They're all like, because I'm sitting there going like, where's your middle eight? What? And you're seeing people perform and they've got no idea about dynamics. They've got no idea about arrangements, really. You know, when you compare to the great songwriters that the songs we grew up listening to, and, you know, even outside of, like, the Motown stuff, and it's just rubbish. I don't hear anything that go, wow, that's a great song. The only songs that make me do that now are perfect pop. Like Teenage Dream, Katy Perry, I listened to that and I went, wow, man, that's great. You know, at the end, they all do the same things, but they do them in varying degrees of perfection. Katy Perry was brilliant. And at the end of it, when she goes up a notch, like they all do, they all go up a notch, which is part of the plot of making the pop record. So when I try to explain that to people, they don't really get it. You know, I said, well, you've got to make me believe you, man. You want me to jump off a cliff with you? Come on, Katy Perry makes me want to jump off a cliff. Taylor Swift makes me want to jump off a cliff because she's excited and it's up and it's vibing. The rest of a modern band's going, oh, God, you're there to Idols. Yeah, I have. I was there in 1977. I heard it the first time. Have you heard Rush? It's the same thing. You know what I mean? Nobody's planting a flag here. No one's landing on the moon. You know what I mean?
Do you feel that going back to those days with Frankie, I mean, you came together as a bunch of mates, I suppose, and then, like, all of a sudden, do you feel like Holly felt it was his band and he was kind of the dictator?
He couldn't have been a dictator because he wouldn't have had anything to dictate. What's he going to tell us about writing music? I mean, the guy calls himself a musician. You can go online and watch me playing the Power of Love with an acoustic guitar numerous places and numerous times. I'm never, you know, he says he's a musician and he's forever telling everybody about how he wrote the melody and the lyrics. And I said, I've never seen you play it. It's only four chords. You're a musician. Why aren't you playing it? It's something that happened to me. I was in a band with great musicians. Of which the three of us in the band, I would say I was the least talented out of, but Mark O'Toole and Peter Gill just never get any credit or any kudos at all for being fantastic musicians, because all we ever hear about is Trevor Horn this and Trevor Horn that. And, you know, Trevor Horn, what's he ever done on his own? He never made any records on his own, never written a song on his own, never done anything on his own.
The Buggles?
Wasn't written by just him. Written by two other people. Written by Jeff Downs. And, you know, look at the people who were in the band with him. Bruce Woolley. And who's the fella? What's he call it? Who's the fella who does all the film soundtracks? Hans Zimmer. Oh. You know, all of this thing about, so it was Trevor Horn, this, Trevor Horn, that. You ask anybody who saw us play live and what we were like live, we absolutely melted faces. And there was nothing substandard or, you know, poor musicianship about what we put together. And we put that together by ourselves. That wasn't put down. Our live show had nothing to do with Trevor Horn. That was, you know, basically me, Mark and Pat. Two lads who were 20 and myself who was 21. We were the ones who put that live show together. We were the ones who went and said, oh, we want the guys who did AC/DC. We want their PA guy, and we want the guy who did their lights, because we knew all about it. So in terms of Holly dictating things, what's he dictating? Who's he seen? He used to go to Eric's. There was a swinging light bulb and fucking about five speakers either side of it. You know, no big shows, you know.
Fond memories, but... All I can say, Mr. Brian Nash, is thank you for allowing me into your pleasure dome. It's been a real pleasure reuniting with you and hearing your stories. And I hope to see
I'm going to say to you, Tony, before we go, you know, because of going back to the days of the last radio show, and last has all but disappeared from the Scouse vocabulary. Nobody says it anymore, but I am starting a one-man campaign to bring it back. And when I say it to people, everyone of my age goes, yeah, everyone used to say last. Everton are last. What do you like them for? They're last. And I'm going to try and bring it back. And I have to say, every time I mention it to someone, I always think of you.
Oh, thank you. I always like the title of the programme.
No, it's fancy. No, mate, it is. And it's like people wouldn't get it, but I get it. And I don't know, mate, maybe next time we'll have a conversation. It'll be littered with last.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I'm trying to organise for the end of this year. It'll be 40 years since we first toured America, and we went all over those big cities and never saw anything of it. And I'm in the process. I've got to start in the next month to try and organise a thing of going round there, contacting the people who went to see us play on those gigs and doing an exchange with them. You show me around your beautiful city and I'll come and play in your living room. And so I'll see if I turn up somewhere close to you. But as soon as I know where I'm going, I'll let you know.
We can
have a few pints of rubbish American beer.
Excellent. I look forward to that. Thanks so much, mate. You take care.
Hey, mate, great to talk to you as well, and you're looking so well as well, and good luck to you.
And you, Nasha. Take care, buddy. Thanks very much.
All the best, lad.
Bye-bye. Ta-da.
And for our American audience, ta-da is goodbye. Great talking to Nasha after so long. What a character. Great sense of humour. And really interesting to hear his perspectives on looking back on Frankie Goes to Hollywood and what it was at the time. And of course, they were such a phenomenon for that period. Exploded, in fact, one of the best-selling records of the year. If you enjoyed what you heard, please review it. Give it 5 stars, maybe 10 if you can. And we'll be back next week with more. This, as in the podcast, it's called Moments That Rock. I'm Tony Michaelides, and we're part of the Pantheon group of podcasts.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.